You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Sleep in Society. I'm your host, Ruhi Snyder, and today joining me for a conversation on motherhood and shift work is one of my dearest friends and colleague, Christine Heng. Christine and I have been in the field of sleep medicine for about 15 years, and we have worked many a nights together. Welcome, Christine, to Sleep in Society podcast.
Hi, Ruhi. Thanks for inviting me to chat.
Well, thank you for joining me.
Of course.
Yes. We've been together now for over a decade and a half.
We have indeed. And what a decade and a half it's been.
It's been interesting. We've seen each other go through many a journeys together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we started at the other lab where we were working, and I trained you, I believe.
Yes, you did. Quite well, I would say.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And then shortly after I left to be at Kingston General to work at the sleep disorders lab there, and then you followed me, which was awesome. And
yes,
we worked many a nights together.
We did. I couldn't stay away from you.
Oh, well, I'm so glad because because we've had many a nights. We've had lots of fun, actually. Despite shift work and all of that, we've really, really enjoyed working together. I've looked forward to working nights with you.
Well, we like to change it up a bit, I think. It's not just straight going to work and letting the nights get us down, as sometimes, you know, they can, trying to stay up throughout the night. It's always a nice adventure and a nice conversation and a learning experience, I think, when we're working together.
Indeed. As a matter of fact, when I started my case study 10 years ago.
Was that 10 years ago already?
This is my 10th year into it right now. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Which, by the way, wasn't a case study at that point. I just started.
I think we just needed to exercise.
Yeah, we partnered together because I remember, do you recall?
I do. How could I forget that? You made me run up the stairs on my breaks from work.
Well, yeah, I think you participated fully.
I was a willing participant.
You were a willing participant. Thank you for doing that, because I think that was if you think about it, such a huge undertaking, training at night and doing stairs, and then we were doing push-ups, and then we were doing some yoga. And I remember at one point definitely doing skipping. Do you recall?
Skipping?
Yeah, we did one night of
the rope, skip rope?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was the beginning of my...
I thought you meant skipping through the halls of the hospital.
Oh, we've done that too.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, well, I've done that.
I didn't partake in that.
No, because I would go up in the basement. They are very, very long hallways.
Oh, yes.
Where I would go...
So not past patient rooms at
3 a.m. No.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Smart.
I always found places that were quiet. Mm-hmm. And so I did do a lot of skipping. When you do the jumps, the tuck jumps and stuff, and then running was actually, those were really good hallways because nobody's around. So you could actually do a full sprint and nobody would hear you.
Right.
And you could really go at it. So, yeah, I did do that. And when I actually started skipping. So, yeah, I think we've had many, many adventures together, I have to say.
Yeah.
And nothing more profound than adventure of being a parent.
Oh, there is nothing more profound than that adventure.
No. How is motherhood going?
It's fun. I love it. It's exhausting, as I'm sure you know, and most parents know. My kids are still quite young, so now, especially in the days of COVID-19 and no school, it's really a new world. having worked the night shift and having small children, because as you know, I went through both of my pregnancies as mm-hmm. a night shift worker, and
I do remember
had small children as a night shift worker. It's a whole new world.
Yeah, I remember actually, Christine, when I first started nights, which was in my mid-20s. Like, I think I went into sleep medicine because of the thesis I was doing, and I just kind of fell into it, and it was great because I got offered a really good job with mm-hmm. money and benefits and all of that. But I didn't actually truly understand the nature of shift work, night shift work. And I think we've talked, where mostly everybody by now who's listened to these podcasts knows that I was very much a late evening chronotype. So I was a night owl to begin with. So it worked so beautifully into my world. And most of my thinking, most of my processing happened at night anyway. Like, even when I was writing my thesis, I was studying, I would do most of my papers and research and all of that in the evening and at night. So the job kind of, it was wonderful the way mm-hmm. it fit into my life. And it was so interesting because it was science and it's clinical and you're helping people. And it just like incorporated everything that I wanted in a job. But I think like as soon as I had my child, everything changed. Mm-hmm. It became something else altogether different. You have this other entity in your head that occupies that space 24/7.
Oh, yeah. I would absolutely agree with that. I would say when I came back to work with my first child, I came back after 6 months. I didn't take a full leave. Her father took the second 6 months. So mm-hmm. I was at work still trying to, obviously not nurse my child, but still give her breast milk. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to work and I was still doing the parenting thing throughout the night, even though I wasn't there with my child. And
how was that? I am nursing component of it. Like, how were you? You were pumping and stuff?
I was pumping, yeah. I would take my breaks and go into an office and pump mm-hmm. a couple times throughout the night. It didn't go very well. Honestly, it didn't last very long. I did the best I could, but it just, without having her there, mm-hmm. I wasn't as successful at feeding her that way. So that, I think maybe that lasted a month or two that I was able to keep up with the breast milk, and then I had to switch to formula for that, which it was a little disappointing.
Yeah.
She ended up a healthy kid. You know, like that was the decision I made, was to go back to work at that point. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, I wouldn't have done it that way. I didn't do it that way with my second child. I took the full year off with her. So I felt like I got a little bit more of the bonding in with my younger daughter. The one thing that I noticed going back to work, and I think that this is going back to work as a parent, and mm-hmm. I'll say especially as a mother, mm-hmm. just because of I breastfed my child or my children, and there is that thing that only a mother can do there, that there was the feeling of being on call all the time.
Oh,
where
yeah.
even though I wasn't there, and even though their father was taking care of them, and their father was taking great care of them, there was always, part of my mind was always with my kid at home, even if she was sleeping, and I knew she was fine. And I think you felt the same way going back to work after your child, right? Is that you're not there completely, you're doing the best job you can to focus on your work and on your patients, but there's also something else lingering in the background all the time.
All the time.
After you
still
after
does.
You go back
I
to
mean,
work.
Once you have a child, that's like, that becomes part and parcel of your, I would say, that's part, that there's a stamp on your brain. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's 24/7. It never mm-hmm. goes away. And I was fortunate enough, Christine, because what I ended up doing was I had a maternity year, and then I extended that for another 2 years with my child. Like, we'll talk about privilege. Yeah, a very mm-hmm. privileged existence, because I got to do a lot of my work was at home. I ended up doing a lot of analysis of sleep studies at home. Mm-hmm. I was doing a lot of literature reviews and literature research at home. But it was very, I still remember even having like your own work hours at home with a little child. It was so difficult at times, because even trying to steal 2-3 hours a day to focus on work and I found it very difficult, because like you, I was nursing my child as well. Mm-hmm. And also your brain is kind of mush after your child is born, really. Like, you know, there is that.
That baby brain is
the
a
baby
thing.
Brain is a very much
it
a thing.
Exists. Like,
yeah.
Do not deny us that.
No, there's definitely data supporting that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we won't be denied on that front.
Okay.
Plenty of data, the post-baby brain.
Like, I thought that goes away as your kids get older, and no, it doesn't.
Or is it because we're sleep deprived?
Or maybe it's because we're sleep deprived and I'm now in my 40s and not in my 20s anymore. It could be, it could be a mixture of things.
And sleep deprivation and shift work. Let's not forget, like, the misalignment. Yeah, I think, like, in my conversation with a lot of mothers, and regardless of like whether they're shift workers or not and where they are in terms of their professions, doesn't matter. It's still, I think everybody, especially as a mother, finds it a very difficult, not everybody. Let me not generalize this. Let me not make it universal. But most of my conversations with other mothers have been that it's a difficult process to get back to work, because the work doesn't recognize in a way that something in your life has completely shifted, that you have this other entity and something, you know, like your body changes, how you feel about life changes. I mean, that's not kind of taken into account in the way that our society works, because when you go back to work, it's the same old, like, you know, that's
your job is still the same at
mm-hmm.
work.
Indeed.
In the office, when you're in the office, you're expected to perform exactly the same as you did before you had a child.
Mm-hmm.
And while we, I think, for the most part, do a very good job of doing that, yes, there's always a little bit of extra something. Your mind is not completely there as it was before you left.
No, because the focus is now, I mean, I think women are great at multitasking, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I think still, as you said, we are, it's like you have this on-call brain. So even when you're working, part of you is still, you know, thinking about your child, especially when they're mm-hmm. little.
Right.
As they grow older, that's a different thing. But especially when you leave them behind. And I remember that so clearly when I had my first night shift. And I think my child was around 6 or 7 years old at that point when I went back, because after I went back to work after 3 years, I was in an administration position, mm-hmm. running the lab and all of that stuff. So I wasn't doing nights. But when I went, changed my job over to Kingston General and went back into the lab doing clinical work, I remember that very first night when I left my child for the first time. And it was a brutal experience. It was a devastating experience. I recall it so clearly. It was such, you know, because not only are you leaving them for the night, you're not even available for the next day, you know, in a way.
Well, ideally, right?
Yeah.
Ideally, you're not available because you should be sleeping.
Yeah. And
but then I think that's a big thing that we need to address here, is that, do you actually sleep? Do you actually take care of yourself after the night shift? Because before kids, in your 20s, you had a night shift. You mm-hmm. came home 7 or 8 in the morning. You went to bed and slept for 8 hours and got up and did it again. After kids, my intention is always to go home and go to bed and get my 8 hours sleep. I don't know if I've ever gotten an 8 hour sleep after night shift since I've had kids.
No, that is quite true. For a matter, right? As a matter of fact, I have data that I've been collecting for a decade that actually shows that's a very rare thing, especially when they're little. Mm-hmm. As my child has grown older, that's changed. But then my sleep itself has also shifted. Mm-hmm. And I recall you were in that boat right now. And when I was in the same boat as you, I remember coming home, getting breakfast organized for the kids. And I had also my niece at that point too, right? Mm-hmm. My sister and my niece, where my sister was doing her MBA and my niece was here, taking them to school, making them breakfast, taking them to school, coming home, going to bed. And I think it's like 5 to 6 hours. And then...
That you sleep or...
That I slept 5 to 6 hours, I think. And then getting up before I had to pick them up from school if nobody else was available. And then having, making sure that everything was ready and prepped for them. And that's also, again, coming from a fact that I did have a lot of help. Like I ended up getting amazing amount of help from, I had fantastic babysitters mm-hmm. throughout when my child needed babysitters. I had amazing queen students. Because everybody had a different schedule. I had two or three at a time, I think, because they all have different schedules, so I could fit them in accordingly. Right. And they very much became part of my family. I always paid them significant amount of money. Mm-hmm. I was never like, oh, minimal payment or this is the rate of babysitting, because I honestly believe that if somebody is looking after your child, they need to be well compensated, period. I think right. It's really an important thing. And also, you know, all of these babysitters, which, by the way, now are very much part of my family, and we're still connected. Oh, they're all really over nice. The world. We're still deep connected. We sometimes travel. They come and visit me. I've taught them how to cook. I fed them. So that component was, you know, it was great that I had that kind of external help, and not everybody did. And like you, Christine, like you are... Not from Canada?
No,
you're not. My American friend, my dearest American friend. Yes. Do you want to tell us a little bit about where you're from?
Sure. I'm from Long Island, New York. My majority of my family is there. Mm-hmm. I moved up here, I think it was about 15 years ago now, mm-hmm. to be with my now ex-husband. Mm-hmm. So... Coming from a town where I lived very, very close to the majority of my family, all of whom I'm very close to, and I was very close to growing up, coming up here and not having that extended family, or not even having my parents close by, my brother and sister close by, I was a little bit concerned when I had children. I knew mm-hmm. that I would be a good parent. I knew that the father of my children would be a good parent, and I am lucky that his family is close, his parents are close, and they are very good to my children as well. But coming from the family that I came from, to not have my family close, not to have my mom, mm-hmm. When my kids have their first fever, or I think maybe they broke their first bone, that part was difficult. So like you, I had to reach out for non-familial help. Mm-hmm. I found a fantastic daycare that, like you said, the people that have looked after your child are now part of the family. I consider her a part of the family. My kids are out of daycare for like 2 years now, and she still brings them gifts for Easter. She brought them a little Easter basket. So it's really nice when you can find help that you trust and help that you can... From people that you bring into your family.
And you connect with.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my parents were so far away from me, and my mother was unable to join me when I had my child, which is heartbreaking in a way because, like you, I'm very, very close to my parents. And I mean, I left home at such a young age for foreign lands. therefore, I was
traveled
like,
overseas.
And therefore, always like kind of left to my own devices. So it wasn't something that was unfamiliar, but the idea of becoming a mother and wanting your mother present was something that I really longed for, because that was it's such a big part of like my culture. Because you would, you know, once you have a baby, you would get to spend a few weeks and sometimes even months with your parents. That was part of that culture. I mean, I don't know how likelihood that is right now, but very much so. And because, you know, it's such a, you're so, in a way, you're it's so vulnerable and fragile when you first have your child, right? Like, just like learning to hold and what to do and like all those things that are unknown after you have your first child.
Right. And all the physical things of your own body that people tend to just kind of gloss over when they're telling you about what it's going to be like to be a new parent. I remember with my first, I had an epidural with both my kids, but I don't know if it was not done correctly and for the first child, but I couldn't like move without excruciating pain in my back for several days.
After?
And, yeah.
Oh my.
So how, like, but then I still have to take care of my child, and those are not to like feel like a superstar here, but those are kind of all those things that you don't put into the equation when you're trying to take care of your child, think about going back to work. And in Canada, we're very lucky that we have as much time off with our children as we do. Mm-hmm. Because in the States, it's 2 months, maybe.
Oh, my gosh. And how are you supposed to reconcile, like, really, like, 2 months after giving birth, like, going back into everything, and then you have, like, this whole another job. Mm-hmm. Basic, like, you know, you have now, if you don't, like, you have two full-time jobs now.
Yeah.
You have, like, your paid work, and then the unpaid work of being a parent. Which, by the way, like they're looking at when a study came out that looked at the actual, in terms of the monetary value of unpaid work at minimum wage. And in the United States, the unpaid work of women was around $15 trillion at minimum wage.
At minimum wage.
At minimum wage. And that number probably would be exponential if you look at countries like India, where it's not just like you're looking after your own child, you're looking after extended family members. And here too, like if you have a sick parent, you that thing is not taken into the equation at all. Like the GDP does not take into equation the unpaid work of women at all. And whether it's like, you know, just like looking after your child, whether it's cleaning, whether it's organizing, whether
feeding people.
Yeah, I feed people all the time. Yeah, indeed. And then,
You're quite good at that. You feed me at night, too.
That
is a very good benefit of working night shift with you, my friend.
Well, you know, I think we made Fiesta. every night into an adventure. Yeah, because I think, like, when one of us was feeling down, we made sure that the other person did something to elevate or to comfort or, you know, to...
Right. It was more of a human experience for us, not just, we weren't going to work just to work. We were going to work to improve ourselves and improve each other. And I think that that's part of being in the healthcare industry, is that that's what we're there for. We're there to help others. We're there to improve someone else's lives. And normally, the focus is on our patients, and it's always on our patients. But also, we need to take care of each other so that we can continue to learn and improve our own skills to help others, and we help each other in the process.
Yeah, because I think
like as you said, we have a really great group. We do work with a fantastic team. And working with you is different than working with each of the other, I think there are, what, six of us total? So each of the other five people that I work with. Mm-hmm. It's a different dynamic with each person.
Yeah.
And we have a different experience with each person. So we're very lucky in that all six of us are pretty darn fantastic. And we come in with our own different life experiences and different skills and different ways to make each other happy and enjoy the time that we have there. But at the same time, learning from each other, I know that I've asked questions of you and all and the other techs when we're looking after patients and we're not sure of exactly how to proceed. It's nice when you're working the shifts that we do to know that we have each other's backs and we have each other's support to get through the night, because that's not an easy part of this job. And as a parent, coming back to what we were saying before, that sleep is not always a priority when we get home.
No, it's
we
not.
Ideally we would like to hop in bed and get our 8 hours, but with the small children especially, they're not down for that all the time.
No, and I think, like, especially coming from a sleep medicine background where we are trying to improve other people's sleep, it also, and we're well aware, it's not like we don't know how important sleep is, how important not just the quantity but the quality of sleep is. But the thing is that reality is not taken into account. Like, our reality is not taken into account at all.
Yeah.
It's not like we don't want to get our 8 hours. I think if we got our 8 hours, if possible, because, you know, sleep during the daytime is very different, by the way, from sleeping at night.
Mm-hmm.
Just not to forget that our circadian systems are also misaligned. So it's not one thing we're dealing with. We're dealing with a multitude of components within our biology that we actually have no control over. Mm-hmm. And so I think them working with one another at night, that kind of support is so important, because not all of us are getting our beauty sleep or health sleep.
You couldn't tell by how beautiful we are, though.
That's true. Inside out. But that's true. Like, I think we also take that into account, that some nights are much worse than mm-hmm. others. And then having that support is so important.
Mm-hmm.
It's
important that we have our support from each other throughout the night. But it's also really important that you have your support when you get home
mm-hmm.
and I'm not going to put children in this, because they have their needs and their needs need to be met. And as parents, we understand that their needs come first, because we're parents and that's what we do. But to have have support in your spouse or your roommate or your parents or mm-hmm. whoever is closest to you and helping you with your day-to-day things, if you have that, I think that that's really important. And as I said before, I don't have my parents close or my family mm-hmm. close, but I have been lucky that I do have people that I can depend on if I need my children looked after for a little while, or if I need to, you know, let them have a sleepover so that I can have one night of uninterrupted sleep every couple months or so.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't have that, which I don't understand how. I mean, I don't envy, but I have a lot of respect for parents that's their reality,
mm-hmm.
that they can't just drop off their kids at a babysitter or their sister's house and have that, because I can't imagine that. As difficult it is for me with young kids and being a single mother now, I still have their dad mm-hmm. and I still have girlfriends that are willing to take my kid. Well, not at the current moment. Nobody mm-hmm. wants my children around other than their dad. But that's just the state of, you know, health, the health pandemic right now. But I usually do have that. So yeah. for the parents that are dealing with perhaps shift work, sleep deprivation, trying to school their children right now and not having the supports, it's
yeah,
that's got to be maddening.
It's a lot. It's a lot on everyone's plate right now. And I think we really need to redefine when we come out of this or during this, how we're going to live as a society. I think that is such an important component. Coming
right,
back
well,
to
now's
this.
Now's the perfect time to, I kind of, in the last month or two, I felt like for me personally, this is kind of a time for me to wipe the slate clean because I haven't really ever had, since the kids, I haven't really had a schedule where I could be like, all right, this is when I'm working, this is when I'm sleeping, this is when I'm going to plan meals for my children, this is when their activities need to get done, this is when I can help them with their homework. And I feel like, because it was always just like one thing to the next and you don't really have time to think. I'm using this time to seriously just kind of regroup mm-hmm. and say, okay, starting from scratch, this is what I want my life to be like when things get back to, I'm using air quotes, you can't tell right now, but I'm air quote normal. because I don't think they're going to be the normal as what we used to know was normal. But
as
I
shift
think
workers,
it might be a
I just
better
wanna,
normal.
I just want to add, Christine, as shift yeah. workers, it wasn't normal.
Yeah, no.
Nor our sleep and our existence and our socializing, all of that, none of it was normal.
Our existence mm-hmm. is air quote normal.
Yeah.
All the time. But one thing that I was curious about with the kids not being in school mm-hmm. now, like the school year's over in Ontario, and I know in many states in the States it's over for the school year, what do you think they're going to do as far as when we do go back? Because there are so many studies about how children, preteens, teens, I think more teens especially, don't function well in those early morning hours when their mm-hmm. school is technically started.
Yeah,
it takes them a couple hours. Do you think that this is a really good time to maybe revisit things like that?
Absolutely. I think they need to, this would be the time to take on that step because there's plenty of data around teen brain. And I think like you and I had a conversation off the record conversation, I think, was that California changed school times, delayed the school times by an hour. And that happened somewhere in September, October, actually, mm-hmm. because I was at the World Sleep Congress when this had happened, when the governor signed the bill, delaying the school times. Now, United States had their school, and this is high school times, were around quite early, around 7:30. Mm-hmm. The Canada and Australia had already delayed school times around 8:30 or so, which is still very early for an adolescent brain, because there's plenty of data showing that the melatonin in adolescent's brain is actually released. It's delayed by at least 2 hours, if not more. Delaying their sleep time, and then, you know, they're not ready to wake up in the morning, that early in the morning, and then go and learn. Like, who would if your brain is still half asleep? Mm-hmm. And my conversations with teens, as I've like been having a multitude since 2014, since I started doing workshops with kids in sleep, has been that they are not, most of them are actually not functioning 8:30 in the morning and would prefer if the school time was somewhat delayed. So mm-hmm. if we are brave enough to change the systems, now is the time to look at that. And I don't mm-hmm. just mean just school times. I also mean in relationship to work. how we work as a society, how mm-hmm. we live, what is the meaning of well-being? Like all of those things is now is the time to make that shift actually happen. And that will only happen if we are brave enough to be able to do that. Because, you know, when we talk about going back to normal, as I said, nothing about shift work is actually normal. Mm-hmm. It wasn't.
Right.
Plenty of data around that, too. So, you know, if anybody wishes to debate on that with me, please come on and let's have a conversation on that for sure. But so I think if we're looking at all of those things, then we need to start paying attention to how do we define what is normal and normal according to whom? How are your kids taking in the physical distancing and not being able to see their friends right now? How's that going on with them?
They're having a lot of trouble with it.
Yeah.
The first few weeks wasn't too bad. They are almost 6 and 11 mm-hmm. now, and they're both pretty social as far as enjoying time with their friends. My older daughter, you know, is in a bunch of team sports, mm-hmm. and she's trying to, they're doing Zoom calls, and they're doing Zoom workouts together for soccer and karate. So she's getting a little bit of, you know, seeing other people, but not being with other people. And that's been kind of difficult for her, that when she's here with me, when she's with her dad, she has step siblings that I think they really enjoy spending time together, and they mm-hmm. can play sports. And but when she's with me, it's just me. We're trying to meet people in our new neighborhood that they can ride bikes with.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, play outside, maybe kick a ball around and not get too close. But they're having a lot of trouble with it. And my kindergartner, I mean, she's in kindergarten, who would not want to go back to school right now. She was really upset when she found out the school year was over. She loved her teachers. She loved her schoolmates, and having a really hard time not seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's nursing a broken arm too. So
that's hard.
Been really, the last few days have been really difficult for her, where she can't really do much at all.
Yeah.
They're having a hard time with it, but they understand that it's for health reasons and that it's not always going to be like this, that they're going to be able to play their sports again. They're going to be able to see their friends again and go to school again. Mm-hmm. It might be different. But they're pretty positive about the fact that this isn't a long term thing, that mm-hmm. we'll eventually get past it and move mm-hmm. on. But I'm in a way glad that they understand that it's a serious thing, so that when we move ahead and I say, hey, don't touch every can of mm-hmm. soup as you walk by, like, They understand that it's for your own safety and the safety of others.
Mm-hmm.
The social aspect is hard for them. I imagine it's harder in your house with a teen.
Yeah, it's actually yes and no as well, because I think our child, and we're really well connected in a way. We have lots of conversations. We have lots of things that we have in common. We do a lot of things together. But I think the importance of having your peer group is so fundamentally important at this particular age, because you're trying to define yourself, and you're trying to move away from your parental units and trying to figure out who you are. And that's, you know, peer group is so very important at this particular age, and not having access to your peers, like, you know, face to face, is, I think, extremely challenging for all of them right now. And that, you know, brings on its own burdens at the moment. So we're trying to figure out ways in which to lessen that kind of angst that they are kind of feeling at the moment. So in terms of, like, you getting back to work, on nights. What do you foresee? Because right now you've been off since when?
I think it's been about 2 months now.
And how has your sleep been?
My sleep has been fantastic, yeah. Actually. Yeah, because I go to bed shortly after my kids go to bed.
Fantastic, yeah.
And get up with them because I'm not making them get up at normal school hours, letting them kind of dictate that kind of thing. So, yeah, I've been sleeping really well, except for the whole having to be a mom mm-hmm. thing of a kid with a broken arm. So the last few days have been difficult, but no, for the most part, my sleep has been a lot better because it's on the schedule. And I've noticed that I'm eating more properly as well. I eat meals mm-hmm. and I plan meals because I have the time for it. And I'm not confused as to what I should be doing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's getting up at noon and do I eat breakfast or do I eat lunch or do I just kind of have a snack and then get prepared for dinner? So like that kind of schedule is, I mean, it's normal. There's the normal word again, but it is more normal. So I think that I'm going to try to maintain more of a schedule. When I go back to work, I think I'm going to be more diligent about these are the days that I have to tweak my hours a little bit, and mm-hmm. then when I'm not working, try to keep a more circadian friendly schedule and do my meals at a certain time, sleep at a certain time. Mm-hmm. How about yourself? Has it been?
Oh, I love that I'm now my own control in terms mm-hmm. of my study at this particular point, because I think it's first time in 20 years that I have somewhat of a normal schedule. Mm-hmm. I am aligned with my circadian rhythms, although insomnia does hit me every once in a while. Mm-hmm. For I have aged despite my best intentions. And but I think I realize that my chronotype has also shifted. I'm no longer an evening person. I'm very much a morning person. Mm-hmm. So, which is normal in terms of women too. Women's chronotype as we age actually shifts, even from evening preference to more of a morning preference. There's there are various studies showing that as well. And I was expecting this anyway. Mm-hmm. So, but it's wonderful to have a realigned circadian rhythm and to be able to go to sleep when you're tired and being able to get up, because, you know, working nights sometimes, you and I have experienced that some nights when you've not had enough sleep during the daytime due to one factor or another, whether it's like the environment or your circumstances or whether it's your biology, nights become like it's very torturous at times.
Mm-hmm.
And despite me like doing intense physical training and all of that, that still, if you've not had enough sleep, then it's going to impact everything else around you. So for the first time, I feel very, very human, Christine. I know what it feels like to be actually truly human. And it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. Thank you, my friend.
I am so happy for you.
Me too. I'm very happy for myself. And, my baseline's completely shifted. And I think it's for me, despite the circumstances of everything else, this is an incredible opportunity for me to study where my rhythms are at and what shifts are taking place, like in terms of my physical and mental well-being, which mm-hmm. is amazing. You know, before.
So is this your second case study on yourself?
No, this is my continuous case study. It's just that my variables have shifted completely. So prior to that, I had to control everything else that was coming at me in terms of the negative consequences, or as I call it, the acts of slow violence related to shift work. I had mm-hmm. to combat that. Right now, because my systems are all aligned, I can actually see where everything is at. So I think it's, I wasn't expecting, this was an unexpected gift in a way. So I think it's going to be interesting to look at this data and then compare it and see what comes out. Even though I have aged, I'm perimenopausal, so insomnia is very much present. But what I noticed, Christine, which was really interesting, is the impact, like that my, when I would get my period, the impact it had on my insomnia when I was doing shift work was so exacerbated. Like, I think in the first, I had a bit of insomnia in the beginning, like a couple of years ago, it was like a night before my period. Then it went up to two nights. And just before the lockdown, that 5-month window prior to COVID isolation measures, I think my insomnia was up to 7 nights a week prior to my period. And a lot of that was exacerbated by shift work. I mean, this is me, you know. I know, it was absolutely insane.
So what is it like now? How is it improved?
So in the past, so I've been, I was in 2-3 times a year where I isolate myself from just the general out, like, you know, I just isolate myself from the world to realign my circadian rhythms and to get off social media and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I was actually in a lockdown at that particular point when isolation measures came into account. So I have been now without, like, doing nights for since mid-March. So what I've noticed is that the impact in terms of my pre-period symptoms have decreased significantly. Even though I do have insomnia, it's not as severe. And the migraines that I was beginning to get have also dampened quite a bit, although I do have allergies right now, seasonal allergies, spring-related. But it's, let's see. I mean, let's see what happens in terms of, like, I'll collect more data and get some more patterns. 2 months is not long enough window for me. Yeah.
But still, for it to be only 2 months and you've seen a significant decrease in that short amount of time is pretty significant.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Going from, like, 7 nights to, you know, a couple of nights. And also then not having to worry about, oh, I am going to be up all night the next night. There's, like, significant shift in that too. So it's that stress is decreased, that variable's decreased significantly too.
Because so just the stress is maybe something that kept you up and contributed to your insomnia, and now that that stressor is gone.
Yes and no, because even prior to knowing that I knew that this insomnia was related to my period, and there was not much I could do about it, because I wasn't able to do, you can't take sleeping pills. Well, I can't, because it's, I've tried prior, like, even 1/4 of a dose, and it's left me, like, really, really foggy. Like, my brain can't really think. I've tried melatonin, and that's been kind of ineffective as well. So a lot of things have not been effective, so I would leave it alone in terms of my insomnia, that it would, if it was going to happen, it was going to happen. I made sure that I was exercising in a way that was good for my body. When I had insomnia, I wouldn't do extreme high-intensity training. You know, as you know, I would go for super long, hyper-long walks or up and down the multitude of stairs that we have at Kingston General at a very low pace, not like at a high intensity pace, because I know that would, if I did that, it would just exacerbate the inflammation. But right now, because I don't have all of those other things, I move in a different way, like, and I feel differently about it as well. I am making all these notes, so I'll have lots of data to compare. For sure.
I'd like to see a graph.
It'll be coming shortly your way. Yes, the
you
graph.
Can totally. Yeah. I know that you have the data to show graphs.
Yeah, indeed.
Don't hold out on me.
Never.
Okay,
never. Good. Yeah. And so what else is, what else are you, now your children, like, they're going to your husband's for a few days, right?
Yes.
Do you think that gives you a good break? Like, does that make you a better parent?
I think it does. I think it's, when we first separated, it was very stressful to think that I wasn't going to see my children every day.
Yeah.
But I had to kind of shift my mind from that to the reality that when you're in a co-parenting situation, whether you're together or you're apart, in an ideal world, the way I saw it and the way mm-hmm. I wanted it was 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you take care of them half the time, I take care of them half the time. It doesn't have to be necessarily scheduled mm-hmm. time when you're, you know, working as a family unit. But we both worked the entire time that we've had our children. So we both contributed to the household that way. We both contributed doing chores and cleaning. So my feeling was we both contribute 50% to the parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I kind of got away from, oh my God, our family's not going to be a unit anymore, to, but I'm still doing my share of the parenting, I felt better about that. I felt better about giving them to their dad for a couple mm-hmm. days, and not giving them, because they're his children too. Mm-hmm. It's not like it, yeah. I'm doing charity. But
sharing.
Now, this is my time to get a good night's sleep tonight and not worry about, you know, someone needing me in the middle of the night. I know if there's an emergency, their dad will call me mm-hmm. immediately, and, you know, but I trust him to take care of the children. It's my time to read, or yes. It's my time to plan meals or plan activities for them and try to get the aspects of my life that are important to make me happy so that I can then in turn show them a happy mom and mm-hmm. be with them the way they need it when they're here. That's the part of being separated and being a single mother that I focus on now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do believe that it's the best thing for them to have both parents. And we contribute different things towards their upbringing. So yes, not having to parent them today, morning to night, letting someone else take care of that, I think it does make me a better parent too, because I mm-hmm. I really enjoy the time with them a lot more.
Yeah.
And I focus more on them.
Yeah, because then that time is devoted to them, and then you have that window of time which is devoted to yourself, which is very, very important, because I don't think women
we
do
don't
that.
Do it.
No, we don't.
No.
We have a tendency, and this is across the board, by the way, have a tendency to put ourselves at the bottom of our own lists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are our children, our work, our partners, our house, our organization for children. All of that comes before we go, oh yeah, like, you know, I do need to cut my nails today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you know what
yeah,
I mean? Like,
that's something as simple as that. That sounds so funny.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there have yeah. been days where I'm like, there are some personal things that need to be taken care of
yeah.
that I just haven't had time.
Haven't
cutting
had
nails
time.
Is one of them.
We'll yeah.
just go as far as that. But what I just said, I think in a past life, I would have felt guilty about that. And I know that there are some people that will hear me say, this is the time for me to make myself happy so that I can make my kids happy. I've been made to feel guilty about my time and making myself happy and doing what I wanted.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's, I don't, I'm positive that that's not exclusive to me. I think as women, like you said, I don't want to say we're trained to do that, but I think it's just in us to put ourselves last.
I think it's very
last.
Much a social, societal component of it, that kind of pressure mm-hmm. that's put upon us. to think that way. It's very much a cultural and a societal component. And I think, like, even in terms of, like, when I did start my case study and training, that was the only thing. I only had that window of time to be able to do that. I didn't have time at home to devote, even 20 to 30 minutes to exercising. Something that is missing in terms of our society, because that's not something we
don't necessarily encourage.
No, not at all. Not at all, because, you know, the only reason I started to train at night was because I didn't have enough time. At the point when it started, it wasn't because it was a case study. At the point when I first started it, it was just literally I had no time to do physical training. I realized I was, very grumpy and negative, which is, you know, not part of my personality.
Right.
And so I started doing physical exercise at night, which, you know, came into a case study, and I continued. It was good because it made me feel good. It made me a better parent. And then I took that as my child grew. I took that very much as a part that it's really important for me to have me time without feeling any sort of guilt around it. Mm-hmm. That I needed to protect that because that was really, really important for my physical and for my mental well-being.
Okay, so yeah, that was something that I really appreciate, that I was part of your case study, however unwittingly that was, because it did bring something new to the nights that was for me and was for you, and actually helped the nights go by faster, and it made me feel better about myself and my health. And that's definitely something, once I do go back to nights, I'm going to start scheduling that in again, schedule that into my my break time, maybe a little cardio going up and down the stairs. And I appreciate that you invited me to join you in that, because I think that's really a really healthy part of combating the whole night shift and the whole idea that we need to find time for things that are important for ourselves. And even if it's during your shift, we need to get it in. And as a parent, we've said it 100 times, we don't have the time during normal business hours to do that. Yeah, that's going to be one of my strategies when I go back to work.
Yeah, I think it definitely helped me, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, gosh, it's into its 10th year, so something must be right there.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's also like shifting as we age. That component also is shifting. So that would be an interesting component to look at going forward. Well, my dear, it's been a pleasure having you.
Absolutely.
On this
Thank
podcast.
You so much.
Yeah. And I hope you come back and we can chat about our other adventures. Many,
oh, I would
many,
love to.
Many, many adventures that we've
had. Anytime.
Working night shifts. And thank you all for joining me on this episode of Sleep in Society, and we will connect soon.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @ruhisleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.